can do that, record. I'm going to look at the last ones in under, okay, speak coherently. There we go. Under lists and loops. Only one we looked at in there was basic loops. And I'm going to take a look at the other three in there. And then if we have time, I'm going to actually skip this and move down to here and then go back to there. So we're going to look at VB functions. So those are the ones that we're going to look at today, and then possibly VB functions, depending on how we're doing. And you should obviously be reading up through Chapter 5 and starting up through Chapter 6. And that's all set, okay. So, back in here. Chapter 5. I guess I'm going to, doesn't much matter, so I'm going to pick use boxes. I don't remember. So I'm looking at use boxes now, and then I'll look at different boxes. Okay, so this one has really only one box in it. The other one has the different boxes. This has a list box in it. Okay, and this list box was filled by coming over here and clicking on items collection. So there is the collection that made the list box. Okay, so I went in over under properties and I picked items, and then the collection that I'm putting in items is this. And they make the point that they want one per line. Okay, so that's my collection. And we looked at last time that there are three ways of getting the data. One is in the load, you can load it in. One is using collections, and one is asking the users what they want, and when they tell you, loading that in. And that was in those three faculty ones that I looked at last time. Okay, so this is the data that is showing up there. Okay, so again, it's under items and then under collection. So I've got a bunch of text boxes and a bunch of little things that I'm doing here. And so I am going to bring up the code. Okay. So in the first one, I'm doing a simple calculation. Now notice I've got one thing defined as global, which is worth paying. And I suspect I'm using it someplace else, but actually thinking about it, I'm not sure I am. So therefore, it didn't have to be global. But I defined it up there as global. And then I had work paper hour and work hours as single. Then I'm using the input box to take things in. And this input box is going to bring up the box and ask for the data, and then I store it in work pay and work pay per hour. Now if I run this, okay, if I run this and I put in my name and then I say I want to calculate pay, okay, so I'm going to click on that and that causes the pay thing to execute. And so I'm saying paper hours 50. Now notice where that box came up. And I click OK, and now the box came up there. The 0, 20, 20 are in there, are coordinates to tell the box where to come up. Okay? So that 0, 20, 20 up there. So I've got 2,000 pay. Okay? So if I get out of here for a minute and I start to do something, so I'm going to do work hours equals input box, and now it's telling me all of the stuff that I can put in. Okay, so it is saying that I can put in a title, and then so I type the title as enter pay per hour. So I'm going to just put in title here, and then comma, and then the next thing is I can put in the default response kind of thing, or actually it's prompt, I'm sorry, that first thing is prompt. And there's the prompt, and there's the title. I always forget what order those go in. Okay, so there's the prompt, there's the title. And then it says default response as string, and I put a zero, and then the positive integers, and those are the positioning things. The X positive and the position, sorry, not positive, position. X position and Y position. So those are going to be the positions where it is put up. Okay, so the X coordinate and the Y coordinate.
What does it say, 0, 20, 20?
The 20, 20 are the coordinates. The 0 is the default response. Okay?
Coordinates to what?
Where the box goes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's the coordinates to where the box goes. So if I put this up again, okay, default response is optional. It's a string expression displayed in the text box or the default response. So if we run this, and let me take that back out again. Okay, so work hours, enter hours worked is the prompt, hours is the title. So if I run this, okay, so I've got Ann, and then I come down here and I click on calculate pay, and it says enter the pay per hour. And so I entered 50, and that says okay. And now this one has popped up there, and it's got the default of 0 in it. So it's got the 0 in it. The prompt is the enter hours worked, and the hours is the title. So I've got prompt, title, and then the default, and then the coordinates are 2020. So I'm guessing that what that is in pixels. And well, points, which are both small, and it's going 2020 is bringing it down. Do you have to have it? No. What that does is, if you care where that box is going to pop up, I get to position the top left corner, and then it positions itself. If I don't care, it picks where it's going to pop up.
Okay.
So my first one, I didn't care, and it just popped up. This one, I said I cared. And it's like 20 down and 20 in, whatever measurement
is. Is that the properties?
Yes, you could have properties in there, but I set them as I went. Oh, for this box, no, you can't have properties. Sorry, I wasn't thinking.
Oh, yeah.
So for that box, you're not going to have properties, so that's why you put it in. So it brings up this pop-up box, and the pop-up box can be extremely simple, or it can have the extra stuff in it. And that just has the extra stuff. So I've got prompt, I've got title, I've got the default, which was 0, and then I've got the coordinates. And so it changes those coordinates. So if I change these, pardon me?
Can you take out the 0?
But you'd leave the comma in.
Okay.
Okay, so 50 again, and then let's play with it. So if I come over here and I leave that out, and I put in here 100, and I put in here 100. Okay, so now if I run this, and I click calculate pay, and again, this is the default position. And notice there's no default value there. I'm just entering it. And now with 100, 100, it has come down, and taking that zero out took out the default. So I don't have the default of zero there anymore. Okay, so now with 100, 100, and 100, 100 wasn't a very good position because it went right over what I was trying to show. But anyway, that is the code that I got. And so then I enter 50 on that, and I've got my pay. Okay. So, if you care about where you position the input box, you can do it. Now, both the input box and the message box do something nice, which is they stop processing. So if you have a loop and you want to get data from the user, you can't use a text box on the screen. You're not fast enough to change what's in the text box if you want user input. And you try to put it on a text box inside a loop, it's not going to work. But if you put it out, if you take in the user input with an input box, it stops the processing of the loop until the user hits OK. And so you can take input inside a loop that's moving fast by using an input box, because that stops things, waits for the user to enter something, hit OK, and then it continues. But again, try to think about the fact that you could never change a text box on a screen fast enough to have it happen within a loop. Okay? And you don't know when to change it either. When in the text box do you want to do it? Okay? So, that's the advantage of an input box and a message box, is they bring things to a grinding halt and give you some time. Okay, now the next thing is calculate raise. Okay, so I am supposed to click on something, so I'm going to pick programmer, and then I said calculate raise. And the raise that I'm giving them is whatever. And it comes up. Okay, now, how I did that was I started out and I said, if first job selector index equals a zero, or list job, no, that's first job, whatever. But this is my first job box. So I said, if it's zero or two, then they get a 5% raise. If it is one or three, then they get a 6% raise. Okay, so I said if it's zero or two, so an analyst would get a 5%, and a network administrator would get a 5%. One or three is a programmer, and so they got a 6%. Okay, so if you take 250 and multiply it by 1.06, hopefully that's what you come up with. Okay. So then I calculate the raise. And then I said, okay, now put the raise into the text box and put the selected, the thing that you selected, inside here. So I said listjob.items.selected, and that gives me the list job that the selected index is pointing to. Okay? So that tells me what the selected index is. Does that make sense? Again, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest problem is remembering what words that I have to put in order to get something to work. And that's one of the reasons why I get you to get the book. And the other reason why you can look at the examples lots of times. But I think that's the hardest part. The logic isn't the hard part in Visual Basic. It's the figuring out how to write it with the dot this, dot that, dot 10 dozen other things, at least in my opinion. You know, I'm always going, and I'm more looking up in this than I do in other languages because I can't remember. I know what I want to do, but I can't remember the phrase to do it. Okay, so then I've got other things, and other things gives me a 4. And I had on yours, and I made a change to this last night, actually, after I'd already put it up. I changed that. If you look at the one you opened, what do you have on? Wait a minute. Other. Yeah. I changed this. I had a number there, I think. If you look at your version of it, what did I have there? I think I had something else. I think that's the one that I changed. But anyway, I wanted the job that was selected. If I put a number there, then I would get a particular one.
Okay. I think we have the same stuff.
Do you have the same one? Okay. I thought I had changed this.
But another thing, mine says like first job, the items count.
Items, one.
This job done.
One, right.
Yeah.
That's what I thought was there.
Yep.
So it said list items and the one is in parentheses, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So if I have the one in parentheses, then it still would get programmer.
Yeah.
Because the one is the going to get the second thing down and programmer happens to be the second thing down.
Yep.
But I must have been playing at some time because that ordinarily would not be what I would do because you don't want to hard code something in like that. If indeed I wanted to hard code it, why not just say move the literal programmer to it? Why bother to say I'm taking it out of the list?
Yeah.
So if I'm going to put a 1 there, I might as well just say make that equal to programmer in quotes.
Yeah.
Because if I'm hard coding the 1, I've taken away the flexibility. So why not completely take it away? Okay. So at some point, I apparently went back, illustrated that or something, and took it out, and I noticed that it was a 1. Okay. And you had asked before, I'm actually going to go back and change these before I save this, because that's how things get messed up. You had asked before about eliminating, and down here I did do the eliminating of the 0 and put in the 40-40, which gets me the thing. Okay?
Yes.
So I am now going to add something to that table. Okay, so I'm coming in here, and I want to add something to the table. So I'm saying add job. And I'm going to put in a job of forensics. Okay, so I keyed in a new job, and I keyed it in as forensics, and said okay. And forensics is now there, and it's telling me I now have 5 things. And in fact, if I scroll up there, it indeed added it to the list. Okay, so I put in forensics when I brought up the screen on this input box. I put in forensics. I then added it to here, and then I also put out the count, and then I simply put it into a text box. Okay. So these are basically just kind of playing around with a box on different things that you can do when you've got a box. You can do a count, you can select an item in the box, and then use selected index to tell which one you've selected. And that's a valuable thing to have, to be able to have the user make a selection and then use the index to tell which one they selected. So basically, there's a lot of code that's going on behind the scenes where you click on something to select it, and it's keeping track of what you clicked on and then making it available to you using selected index. Okay. Questions? You all look bored out of your ever loving minds. Sorry about that. Usually people look a little more with it. Okay. So now I'm going to open the next project. And this is different boxes. Okay. So here, if I click on these boxes, this one is a list box. This is a checked list box. So when you go over here, there's checked list box, and I can bring over checked list box. And then that's just a plain list box. Okay, but they add this kind of list box that lets me do checked list boxes. Okay, again, I used collection to put that up there. So that's got collection, and I've put them all up there using collection. Items collection. And then the other thing that I have to do is, and I keep forgetting that they change that on me automatically. I want multiple columns. Multi-column, there it is. Multi-column. So multi-column means that I set that up so it goes across multiple columns. If I change multi-column to false, then see what I've got? When I change multi-column to false, I get them all in one column, and I get that scroll bar that will let me scroll up and down between them. So in the properties, I set multi-column to true, and then it tries to basically do what it can to fill the text box correctly. So I'm going to set it back to true, and now I have multi-columns, and there's even a third column over there. If I drag this out, you can see there's a third column. So, in this one, if I look at the code, okay, and I don't have an awful lot of code here, but I started out on the first one, and I want to find out if something is in that box, okay? So I want to take a look in that box at the items and find out if it contains something called textlanguage.text. Okay, so if I run this, again, there's a lot of stuff you can do with these boxes. If I run this and I put in here, I want to put one that I can't see, so I'm going to put COBOL. And then I say click to check, it comes back and tells me it's in the list. Okay, so it literally goes and checks the list, which is basically set up like an array, and we haven't really gotten to arrays yet, but it's set up like an array, and it tells me that COBOL is in the list. And I say okay, and now if I put in here ABC and say click, it tells me it is not in the list. So it's going into the list and telling me that that item is contained in the list, which is, again, just another way I can use a box. I can say Okay, I want to know if this is in the list, and that's a valuable thing to know at various points. Okay. Then I've got down here, click, so I can click different boxes. Okay, so I click those boxes, and I click for a count, and it tells me how many I clicked. And then it puts the ones that I clicked into a separate list and adds this because the scroll bar, because I need to be able to scroll. So I started out there and I immediately put into the item box or the list box down here the words, "This is my list," because I wanted that there. And then I said, for count equals zero, to count minus one. Okay, so I basically am saying go from zero to the number of items minus one. So I'm checking everything to see if it was checked. Okay, and again, as the index starts with zero and a count starts with one. And this count is my index. Maybe I should have called it an index, but CT is an index. And it starts at zero, and I'm saying, okay, count how many are here. Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it goes from 0 to 6 to check each one of them. Since there's 7, it goes from 0 to 6 to check each one. Okay. So inside I say, if the one you're looking at is true, so I'm saying if the list of courses dot get item checked modified by count. So the first time through and count is zero, it's going to look at programming logic. And I then say if it's true, meaning if it's checked, add one to word count. So I'm counting how many of them are checked. So if the item is checked, the item the count is pointing to is checked, then I add one to word count. And I also take it and write it in the bottom text box. So I say add it to the bottom text box. Okay. And then I go back up and check the next one. And if it's checked, I add that my second one isn't checked. So I won't add. I won't add one to word count, and I won't move it to the box. So all I'm doing there is just counting how many are checked and then making a separate list of the ones that are checked. Yes, no, maybe?
What do you have to click twice on the...
I don't know why you have to. That's just plain annoying, isn't it? You'd think they managed to get it so you could only just click, but you have to fight with it to get it to click.
Oh, there's a property that says check on click, and it's too false.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Ooh, good to have students around. Where does it say that? Neat. I've gone through life not knowing that one. What property is it?
Check on click.
Okay. Check on click. So, indicates that the check mark should be toggled with the first click on an item.
It works.
But that's absolutely bizarre. Who would think you didn't want to toggle it, have it go on the first click? At least if you're going to have it, why isn't it set to true?
I know.
I mean, that's just positively bizarre. And in fact, I have never known that existed. Huh. And you're right, it works like a charm. Thank you. It works like a charm. I mean, the problem is, I'm very serious when I say, everything you put over there from over on the side, all the tools, have their own separate properties. And if you go, that's great that your instincts took you to look at the properties and try to figure it out. That's fantastic. Because that's what you should do. However, I just got annoyed. I didn't go look for a property that would let me change that. I just blamed Microsoft. Okay. Questions on this one? Okay, the last one then is the guess game. Okay, now what this one has here is a track bar, which is kind of a nice little tool if you want to program something where you have to pick a number or something like that. So this track bar is another tool that you can drag over. Okay. So, if I run this, and then we'll look at the code. If I run this, I have to click on play game. And probably I should not have had check guess come up. It should have hidden that. So I now dragged it over and said 15, and I'm checking my guess, and your guess is too low. Notice play game has gone away. And then it's too low, so I'll go up there, and it's still too low. It's still too low. Got it. So 24, I got it. Okay. So then if I click play game again, it goes back. I pick a number and say check guess. It's too low. And I got it at 22. And play game. I keep getting the two lows. I'm looking for a two high here someplace. There's a two high. And that one was 17. Okay. So, what I've got here is the very simple game. So, the first thing is I defined random numbers up there, and so I said dim random number as new random, and this will allow me to get a random number. And then I dimmed the random number as the place I wanted to store it. So down here under play game, I said the random number equals random.next. And then I put the 25, which is my upper limit, in there and put a plus 1 because I wanted to start with 1 and not with 0. Okay, so that is generating a number between 1 and 25. Okay. Then I said, make the button play game visible, and I really should have made the other button at some point, set that to not visible. But anyway, I made the button play game visible so that once I had a random number, they can play. Up until the point that I picked a random number, they can't play, so I don't want that visible until I picked a random number. I'm sorry, I want it visible. Would somebody correct me, please? I want the visible set to false. I've already clicked on it. And now I want to set it to false so they can't click on it again. That's my point. Essentially, I want to control, and I set it backwards, but I want to control when they're clicking on that button. Okay? So I start out, and the button is there. And as soon as I click on it, I am going to button play game. Okay? So I am picking a number, and I probably should tell them to do that. And then I say play game and pick a number. Okay? Now, that first number I picked, I didn't use. It's now been picked again. So, in other words, that play game is allowing me to go in and do it. So, if I come in here again, okay, play game lets me play the game. And as soon as I've clicked that, that becomes invisible. Okay. So then I have setting this number, and I then click on check game. Check guess, rather. And that's too low, so I keep going up, and I keep going up, and eventually I'll hopefully get it. Too high. So 22 is it. So if you look at check guess, I set different colors, and when they get it, I have a particular color that comes up. Now notice this with. This with keeps me from having to write the beginning part, and this is probably a lousy example in that it's only 5 characters. But by putting that with there, all of the things inside are taken to start out with lblmessage.forColor, lblmessage.backColor. Well, if you happen to name something 20-character name, this is a really nice thing to have. Because what I can do is just change the thing that I want to change, which is forColor. So I'm saying lblmessage.forColor. And I'm just changing the part that is going to be different. And the with tacks that LBL message on at the beginning before the dot. So that's kind of neat, and it saves you a little bit of writing. You can go through life never using it, but it saves you a little bit of writing. And I changed the colors to crimson, beige. I changed the border style, etc. Okay. Now, the other kind of interesting thing is that this is driven by the form. If I were writing this, think back to JavaScript when we did the guessing game. I had to put in a decision. Do you want to play again? Yes or no? And I had to write all that. When I'm working in Visual Basic, I can just put in buttons. And if they want to play again, they click the button. And if they don't want to play again, they don't click the button. So it's a lot more user interactive than where I have to bring up an if statement and ask them a question and they have to respond. And it's a lot easier to write. And also notice that I don't have a loop, because every time they want to play the game, they're playing a game. So I don't have to have a loop. Do you want to play again? Yes or no? If it's yes, I go back to the top of the loop and drop down. If it's no, I get out. And the same with the guess. I don't have to have loops anywhere near as often in this, because I've got so much control happening through the buttons. So they click a button when they want to make a guess. They click a button when they want to play the game. And I don't have to have default loops built in. Okay, so I'm simply asking if the text guess equals the random number, then they've got it. Else, if it's greater than, it's too high. Else, it's too low. And I can handle all that just in a simple nested if. Questions? Okay. So that essentially finishes up what I wanted to do in the loops one. And the next project that I want to look at, as I said, is the VB functions. So bring up the VB functions if you want to have a copy. Okay. For you who are in the PHP class this morning, I don't think there's any overlap. there would be overlap here. Okay. What I've got here is a whole series of conversions that I want to do. And we're using functions to do them. So if I run this, it says, be sure to enter data in the two text boxes. The second one should have an embedded ampersand. And that's simply because of what I want to do. Okay, so I click OK and the form comes up. And I need to enter Susan Ash and John ampersand Doe. Okay, so I've done what it told me to do. So now I'm saying convert, okay? And I've got a bunch of buttons. Convert, access, more, and replace. So I'm looking at convert. And what I did there is I used the function to say take textfirst.txt and convert it to uppercase and then add it to the list of items. So I took whatever the user put in, I said convert what they put in to uppercase, and that's a function. Now there are two functions in VB. One is functions that are provided to you, like uppercase, lowercase, substring, instring, all of those kinds of things. And the other are functions you can write. And we'll look at those on Thursday, but they are functions that you get to write.
Where do you get the other functions?
They're just part of Visual Basic.
Okay.
They just, the uCase is a function.
Oh, okay.
And it just says convert to uppercase. Okay, so it's a function. And a function, when it's written, is you write the function, and then you put whatever it is you want to convert inside the parentheses. So that's how the function works. I write what the function is, and then I put whatever it is I want to have acted on inside the parentheses. Okay. I didn't have a good night's sleep last night. Okay, so then I say uppercase textfirst.txt. So it converted that to uppercase. And then the other one I said lowercase, and it converted that to lowercase. And there's a lot of these little functions that let you do something. When I started programming, they didn't have all these, and we actually had to write a lot of code to do that. I can remember on a substring, you remember what a substring is? It means take out part, a few of the characters that are inside. And we had to write, and we turn the word into an array. And then we'd have to check each character of the array, looking for the letter that we wanted in order to do it. Now we have instring and substring, which let us just let the computer do it. And it generates the code behind the scenes. So functions are wonderful things because they do the work, the hard work for you, and it makes sense. Why should programmers waste their time doing a conversion to uppercase or lowercase? You know, everybody wants to do the same thing when you do that. If it's provided for you, you don't waste your time. And so it makes sense. Okay. So down on the next one, I said the next one is access, so I'm going to click that. Only I need to close the ink layer. Okay. So now I'm saying access, and it is giving me a whole lot of stuff back. And if you're not running this on your computer, you probably should. The first thing is it gives me length. So it goes in and tells me the length of Susan Ash, because I'm only looking in this example at text first. So it gives me the length of Susan Ash. Okay, so Susan Ash is 9 characters. 5 for Susan, a space is 6, and 3 more for Ash, so it's 9 characters. And on each of these, I am going in and adding these to this list so I can show you the output. But if I had wanted to, I could have said a work area and said something on the order of work LEN equals LEN text first dot text, which basically would get the length and assign it to work length. And then once I've got it in work length, I can do what I want with it. Okay? I didn't do that in this example. I just used a list box and put it into the list box. So now my next one comes down and I said mid. So I'm going into textfirst.text, starting with character 3. Okay, because the mid is saying, and mid is like subscript. Mid is saying go into textfirst, start with the third character, and take 4 of them. Okay, so I am starting with the third character and taking 4 of them. If I say just start with the third character and I don't tell it how many to take, it goes until the end. So the third one there goes to the end. I see S-A-N because it started with the third character, which is the S, and it goes to the end. On the next one, I used Hello World. And I said start with the 7th character, which is W, and go for 5, so I got world. On the next one I said, and this is why I wanted you to type an ampersand in, find the ampersand. So in string finds the ampersand. Okay, so in string will tell me where the ampersand is. So I'm saying look at textsecond.text and find the ampersand. Okay, another way to write the mid ones is to go textfirst.text.substring 3, 4. And that does exactly the same thing. Okay, so instead of using the function mid, I said take that field and find the substring of 3, starting at 3 and going for 4 characters. Okay, now what's the difference between that and mid? They both use 3 and 4. What's the difference? No. It's more about the 3.
Starts after 3?
Yeah, well, yeah. The count is going to be what? It's starting to figure out the third character. It's starting with 0. So, if I start with 0, S is 0, U is 1, S is 2, A is 3. And that's what happened with substring. When I start with mid, S is 1, U, 2 is U, 3 is S, and it starts with the S. So mid does numbers as 1, 2, 3. Substring does numbers as 0, 1, 2, 3. Okay? They just like to confuse our lives, that's all. But that's what they successfully have done. So with 0, with substring, the first one is 0. It basically uses an index. And up here, the first one is one. Okay, so that's how they acted differently. And I think people mostly get in the habit of using one or the other and don't bounce around with this, or they would drive themselves nuts. Okay? Now, the next one is the more. And so I've got now a bunch of more things down there. The first one is reverse. I'm not real clear on why I ever want to reverse it, but if you do, you've got the ability and a function. So reverse just takes and says string reverse, text first. And notice what comes out? Has nasus or whatever. Okay, it's reverse the name. The next one allows me to concatenate. So I said, show me text first, concatenated with five spaces, concatenated with text second. So I've got the first name, five spaces, and the second name. Okay, now, they used to have a left and a right function, like the mid function. And there used to be a left and a right. But essentially, they decided on using left and right for something else. And they decided they didn't want to continue those. So what they do is they say, okay, if you want to use the old-fashioned with left and right, then you have to put in front of it Microsoft.VisualBasic.left, Microsoft.VisualBasic.right. Yeah. And that allows you to use left and right. Now, left and right are kind of nice things. Left lets you take things off from the left side. Right lets you take things off from the right side. But clearly, they're discouraging you from doing that. And that's why they have that written that way. And also, it's to avoid the confusion. So if I do left 4, I get SUSA. If I get a left 5 on hello world, I get the leftmost 5 characters and I get hello. If I do a right 4, I get space ash. Okay, because her name is Space Ash. Okay. And then the last ones are doing a replace. And I'm replacing that ampersand with a percent sign. So I said replace the ampersand with a percent sign. And then just to show you that you can replace multiple things, I said in my alphabet, which I just defined, replace TUV with XXX. And then I went in with a mid and said ZZZ. And it went into 20 and put those in as the next 3 characters. And then I wrote it out. Okay. What we're going to do for the next... Oh, you got about 15 minutes of it. I want you to work on the name flip thing that I like to have people do. So I'm going to have, if I have the name Ash / Susan, or if I have the name Williams / John, or whatever I have, I've got the name in reverse. And I want to flip it, so I want it to become Susan Ash, and I want to flip this one So it becomes John Williams. With a space in there, by the way. Okay, so I want to flip the name. Because lots of times, basically, on a file, you store the name, last name slash first name, or last name comma first name or something, but you store it in last name order in case you want names alphabetical. You don't want the first name, the alphabetical thing. But if you want to use the name to write something out, you want to have the first name followed by the last name. So that means you have to have the ability to flip the name. Okay. So what's the key to being able to flip this name?
The slash.
The slash. Okay. So where does the first name start?
After the slash.
So it's the location of the slash
plus one.
Okay. And that can go to the end. Now the last name starts at the beginning. Where does it go up to? But I don't want to include the slash. Yeah. Right. So go back and look at these functions. And I want you to write a simple program. You can use mine. You can use this program that I've got here. And you can just add your own routine, add your own button in your own routine. And I want you to flip the name. So, as I said, I just use my program and add another button that says flip name and flip the name. So that means you have to enter the name as last slash first. So none of the other things will work, but that's all right. Or most of them actually will. The one thing I should mention, probably in case you don't think about it, is where I have a number in here, if I want to, I can put a function in there. So I can put an in string in there. So when I'm going along, instead of a number, I can have a function. So I can put in a function in place of a number, I can put a variable in place of a number. It doesn't have to be hard-coded numbers like I have there. So I can put a variable in, or I can put a function in. And the function that I would consider putting in is the in-string function, because the in-string function is what's going to find my slash. If you're having problems with it, just try extracting the first name. And then after that, try extracting, doing the rest, but just try extracting the first name. And you can store it in a work area and then extract the second name and store that in the work area. And then concatenate the two together.